From KUAR News in Little Rock, welcome to another look at Arkansas news, politics, and more. Coming up,
as Arkansas's March 1st primary nears, the governor is defending state legislators who could vote to continue Medicaid expansion.
That very same governor shares new details of his recent meeting with federal officials on possible changes to that very same Medicaid expansion.
Presidential candidate Marco Rubio is coming to town after another round of endorsements from state officials.
Rubio and the rest of the Republican presidential field criticized President Obama for a planned trip to Cuba, but Arkansas senior U.S. Senator John Bozeman thinks it's all right.
Spending in Arkansas's race for Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court nears $1 million. But who's doing the spending?
All that and more is coming up. I'm Chris Hickey.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Michael Heplin.
Jacob, this week, Governor Asa Hutchinson made a couple of appearances where he discussed a recent meeting he had with federal Health and Human Services officials up in Washington, D.C., about changes to Arkansas's Medicaid expansion, or what he's rebranded Arkansas Works. Could you tell us a little bit about what those outcomes are and what kind of message the governor received from Sylvia Burwell and others?
Yeah, and because all this Medicaid money comes from the Affordable Care Act, it's federal dollars, all of it is on the conditions approved by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Sylvia Burwell. The governor, along with several state legislators, people in leadership, the Surgeon General, Gregory Bledsoe, whose mother is in the state Senate and is one of these iffy votes on the program, they all went to Washington, D.C. The governor told the healthcare task force, standing room only, you know, dozens and dozens of lobbyists, state legislators, it can be committee room in the Capitol. He said that overall that he thinks that federal officials, they're working well together, they understand each other's concerns. They said that some of the governor's proposals in this letter he released were innovative and quite substantial reforms, which the governor, of course, wants to be saying to conservative lawmakers that I am making substantial changes. He did say, though, that he butted heads a few times. Here's Governor Hutchinson. He's trying to distinguish himself from the Obama administration, saying that although he's continuing Medicaid expansion or wants to, it's not what he wants the program to be like in the future.
This administration sees it differently. Rather than temporary assistance to an end goal, this administration sees the Medicaid expansion as a permanent program. And that's a fundamental difference between us. And so, I see the coverage as more of a means to work opportunities that are conditioned upon certain behaviors that we desire, such as work, social responsibility, and healthy living, the Healthy Arkansas Initiative. This administration sees that health care coverage without as many specific conditions. I see it as a means of moving up the economic ladder. This administration sees it as a permanent status.
But just because Governor Asa Hutchinson and the Obama administration do have these fundamental differences over what Medicaid should be like for these people, the governor wants people to work on this program or have some sort of personal responsibility tie-in. But he says just because we have these differences doesn't mean that we shouldn't try as a state to try to work within the confines, especially because the Affordable Care Act changed a lot of other funding in the state.
Federal policy right now is fixed in Washington, D.C. Let's make the best decision now for Arkansas. As federal policy changes, we will adjust accordingly. As powerful and determined as we are, we cannot change federal health care policy by simply being stubborn.
And getting all the same amount of money for the same 200,000 or roughly people that are covered is the governor's ultimate goal, but he wants it in a block grant that would allow the state pretty much to pick and choose how they distribute that money to those people without having a lot of federal approval. He's hoping if there's a Republican president that could happen. Let me try to do real briefly, though, get into the four main areas of the actual policy that the governor said they have some. Nothing is settled in stone yet with federal officials, but they have worked out some details. One is the governor wants to really push people who are on the private option to be covered by their employers if possible. So one, he would require these people, if their employer plan is offered, to switch over to that instead of through the private option. Part of that would be the state might help give some premium assistance to these small companies to help them pay their share of the insurance as well. So that's one. The other one is this big one is to incentivize work. Cannot require people to work. The federal government said that's not going to happen. but he is going to give everyone on the program a work training referral, which means somebody at the state government has to tell you this is a program you can do. It'll help you improve your job skills. However, you're not required to go and not required to complete anything either. Third one is a small amount of premiums, up to 2% of your income for those that make over 100% of the federal poverty line. That's the maximum approved by the federal government. It's not any new territory necessarily. And the fourth thing would be this broad category of program integrity. And a lot of that is simply how the state administers it through the Department of Human Services. They want to eliminate this 90-day retroactive coverage right now. So right now, if you get Medicaid expansion, they'll pay all your bills from the last 90 days. They want to start that coverage just from the point of when you're approved. The big thing that wasn't in there, the governor, he didn't really even mention it during his speech. He was mostly brought up afterward during reporters' questioning, is he originally wanted to test people's assets. If you had a certain amount of money in assets and you're too wealthy for the program, you couldn't get coverage. He said that was a non-starter with federal officials.
Jacob, it's been interesting looking at this politically, as there's still a lot of opposition from Republicans, and there are a few state lawmakers facing challenges, Republicans who are getting primary challenges from more conservative candidates who are still saying this is essentially Arkansas working with the Obama administration and going along with the Affordable Care Act, and this will need a three-quarters vote to pass. And it sounds like the governor's doing some counting, really trying to sway and convince people about this, and even said he essentially is opposed to the Affordable Care Act. But it's kind of what you had in one of your cuts there, is saying we're doing the best thing for the state here by working with the federal government on this.
Yeah, and because of the primary being moved up from May or April to March 1st, it's put this whole new dynamic in all of this, because we could have people that were voted out of office voting on it, which Greg Shufelt, a political scientist at UALR, thinks that'll probably make the program be supported, since if you're defeated, you're less likely to switch your vote around. But there's a lot of politics to it, and so the governor tried to get out ahead of his announcement to the legislature. The day before, he was at the old Supreme Court room at the Capitol, had maybe about 20 legislators behind him, some of them facing those tough primary challenges. There's three state Senate races being challenged by anti-private option people, and that's enough to swing the vote of power in the Senate. Only 9 people can block the whole program. So here's a little bit of what Governor Asa Hutchinson said with these lawmakers behind him in the old Supreme Court room. He just said that saying that Medicaid expansion is Obamacare is flat wrong. He said it's the worst in politics.
They're making the linkage between everybody who supports Arkansas Works and any form of the Medicaid expansion in the states must be an ardent supporter of Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. Let me tell you today, that is not so, and we need to debunk that argument.
So right now, Governor Asa Hutchinson's face is on a lot of mailers for these state legislative candidates that might support Medicaid expansion that maybe have in the past. He's saying, hey, it's okay, you voted for me, I'm the Republican governor. But at the same time, people are getting in their mailboxes these special interest mailers, one from Americans for Prosperity Arkansas. Here's a statement from their chair, David Ray. He said, today, Governor Hutchinson attempted to paper over the fact that Medicaid expansion is one of the core pillars of Obamacare, just like the employer and individual mandates. So Asa Hutchinson's speech did not sway them, at least, those interests. This will be the last thing I want to say about Medicaid expansion. Might be a good segue into the presidential race. The politics of this played out just perfectly before all this happened last week during the South Carolina debate on CBS between Jeb Bush and John Kasich.
I admire the fact that Governor Kasich is supporting spending more money on drug treatment and mental health. I think that's a high priority all across this country. But expanding Obamacare is what we're talking about. And Obamacare's expansion, even though the federal government is paying for the great majority of it, is creating further debt on the backs of our children and grandchildren. We should be fighting Obamacare, repealing Obamacare, replacing it with something totally different. When I was, as a private citizen, Florida was confronted with this choice. The governor was supportive of doing what John did. So was the Florida Senate. A committed Speaker of the House asked me to go as a private citizen to make the case against the expansion. I did, and it wasn't expanded there, just as it wasn't expanded in South Carolina under Governor Hayden.
Governor Kasich, real quickly, jump in.
Yeah,
I got a question
for
Governor Bush, but jump in.
First of all, when Jeb was governor, his first 4 years as governor, his Medicaid program grew twice as fast as mine, okay? It's just a fact. Now, with Obamacare, I've not only sued the administration, I did not set up an exchange, and he knows that I'm not for Obamacare, never have been. But here's interesting about Medicaid. You know who expanded Medicaid five times to try to help the folks and give them opportunities so they could rise and get a job? President Ronald Reagan. Now, the fact of the matter is we expanded to get people on their feet, and once they're on their feet, We are giving them the training and the efforts that they need to be able to get work and pull out of that situation. So that's what we're doing in our state.
South Carolinians need to know this because the Cato Institute, which grades governors based on their spending, rank him right at the
Governor
bottom.
Bush, fine.
Governor Haley's ranked at the top.
Let me get a question.
No, you mentioned my
name. I understand.
Let me finish this.
Wait. Hold on, Major.
South Carolinians want to make sure that they elect the most conservative governor or candidate that can win.
Let me tell you.
A question on economic growth, Governor Bush.
Major, I got to correct the record. And the fact of the matter is, we went from an $8 billion hole to a $2 billion surplus. We're up 400,000 jobs. Our credit is rock solid. And I don't know, look, the bottom line is the people of this country and this state want to see everybody rise, and they want to see unity, and I don't want to get into all this fighting tonight because these people are frankly sick of the negative campaigning, and I'm going to stay positive about what I want to do.
Of course, neither of these candidates, Jeb Bush or John Kasich, have much support in Arkansas at this point. I think Jeb Bush had 1% in the last Talk Business and Hendricks College poll. Kasich had about 4%. Neither of them really have any state lawmakers endorsing them.
And it's interesting to me that these are basically two governors that are debating, and Hutchinson is obviously wielding his popularity as a governor to influence the electorate. And it's kind of his first test of popularity since he was elected in a way. Do you think that he's, using it effectively?
He hopes to use it effectively. I guess we'll see what the primary results are and ultimately what happens in the special session expected in early April before the fiscal session. But he has three main arguments. He's not just doing this because he thinks Medicaid expansion is good. One is these people have already had coverage, 200,000 people for 2 years. He thinks, we just have to keep giving them coverage out of a sense of fairness. The other one is he says the uncompensated care network that existed previously has been dismantled. You can't just simply reset all of that in a quick amount of time. And the biggest reason probably is that without this, because it is an increase in federal dollars, is the state budget would be harmed about $100 million every single year without it.
Yeah, the ramifications, $100 million. I mean, the governor saying this would impact highways and kind of have a ripple effect through everything else. And I think we're really going to see here how effective Governor Hutchinson is, whether or not he can twist arms and use his power, because the former governor, Mike Beebe, while he was a Democrat, he was still able to sway lawmakers. It was razor tight for him to get it each of the years. But we'll really get a sense here of how effective Governor Hutchinson is in controlling members of his own party here.
The way he talked about private option or Medicaid expansion did sound a lot more like Mike Beebe to me, the former governor. Hutchinson's kind of been very cautious a lot, kind of couching everything he says, but Beebe would always say, hey, you're going to ruin the state budget if you don't do this. And here's a quote from Hutchinson. He said, you're going to endanger public safety. You're going to jeopardize our commitment to education. So he's not really holding as many punches anymore. He's saying that if you vote for the primary candidate who doesn't support this, you're going to hurt public safety.
Well, speaking of primaries and elections and popularity of candidates, we just received news today as we record this that presidential candidate, U.S. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, is going to be coming to town on Sunday. And this comes after earlier this week, a few state lawmakers gave the U.S. Senator from Florida their endorsement. It seems like among the establishment candidates, when you set aside, Donald Trump or Senator Ted Cruz, who are doing well in polling here, Marco Rubio really seems to be the next in line as far as popularity in candidates. And he surely has the most endorsements from state officials compared to any other presidential candidate.
Rubio, he got the endorsement after Huckabee's exit from Iowa from Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin and U.S. Representatives Steve Womack and Rick Crawford. So those are good endorsements for him. He's got most of the state legislative leaders, Senate Majority Leader, House Majority Leader. But the big outstanding endorsement from Governor Asa Hutchinson, still out there, we don't know. He says he will endorse before Arkansas's primary. Tom Cotton has never endorsed anyone along the way, and Senator Bozeman is still up for grabs. But at the Capitol this week, State Senator Bart Hester announced 28 state legislators supporting Marco Rubio. It's about a dozen more or so than had been reported previously. And State Senate President Jonathan Disming was among those who endorsed for the first time. He was not a Huckabee supporter previously. And he said that he really thinks Rubio is someone who can unify what is a divided party.
I think that the party is divided, and I think you see that all the way to the press conference that we had. It's important that we have someone that, you know, that the majority of our, the majority of folks can get around, and I think Rubio's that guy.
And, you know, Rubio is being seen as kind of an establishment-friendly candidate in comparison to Donald Trump, maybe, or Ted Cruz, but Michael knows him a little bit from his experience in Florida with him. He really was a pretty right-wing guy then.
Yeah, I was working in Miami at the NPR station down there, WLRN, when he was one of the Republican leaders in the state legislature, Cuban-American. There were a lot of political leaders in the state who were Cuban-Americans, and I never covered him a whole lot down there. And I'll be honest with you, while he always came across as a very sharp, likable person, I never necessarily thought of him as presidential material the way, you know, encounters with Bill Clinton or Mike Huckabee in their days as governor here in Arkansas when I was covering them in the 90s, the way they came across. But it has been interesting to see him ascend since I left there and came back to Arkansas in 2009, ascend to the U.S. Senate and now in the presidential race. And what's really benefited him is seeing the fighting between Trump and Ted Cruz. And he's really coming across as more of perhaps the mainstream candidate. Maybe not mainstream in terms of the overall population, but within Republicans, someone who's not involved in this back and forth fighting that you're seeing between Trump and Ted Cruz. So a lot of people, I think, are really seeing him as maybe someone who could actually be effective in the general election if he actually gets through the primary, or perhaps maybe as a vice presidential candidate.
And I talked a little bit with Bart Hester, who is the state chair, he's a state senator, but he also watched the South Carolina debate with Kasich and Bush, but he referred to Rubio's closing statement. And, you know, somebody asked him, you know, Rubio doesn't seem like a guy who can really win rural Southern voters, maybe, and Bart Hester made the case that he really does think Rubio has some good evangelical points.
In the debate last week, in his closing statement, he continued to pound home the message of family. That resonates in rural Arkansas. He continued to be very clear with his position that God determines the definition of marriage between one man and one woman, not some judicial branch. He drove home the message that abortion is something that Americans should not stand for, and he will not stand for as a president, that he believes that life begins at conception, and he's going to fight for the unborn in Arkansas. So Marco Rubio's positive message and message of family and faith and the beliefs we all hold here in Arkansas is going to do very, very well.
And Senator Hester, of course, sponsored legislation last session to prevent local cities from passing their own ordinances protecting LGBT people. His kind of brother in that crusade was Bob Ballinger, who is endorsing Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz probably has the second most amount of endorsements from elected officials in Arkansas, but all of them, except for Secretary of State Mark Martin, are just regular state legislators.
It's interesting to me. We heard there that Hester kind of emphasized Rubio's stance on certain key social issues. He obviously said family and faith, but any idea from either of you as to any other policy positions that Rubio might have that would seem appealing to Arkansans or Arkansas lawmakers in a way that would garner so many endorsements?
Well, I think he will probably, when he comes here on Sunday, have, I would imagine, done a little bit of research and maybe come here with a few ideas that he can bring and propose. But Jacob, you mentioned in your reporting that Senator Hester was confident the state would get a visit from Marco Rubio. And we didn't learn until this morning, Friday morning, the email went out at 6 a.m. that indeed he would. But it will be interesting to see if perhaps he gets anyone like, say, Governor Hutchinson, surprising everyone by joining him on stage. That would be obviously a big benefit to his campaign, but we'll see what he can bring. You know, one thing that's extremely interesting, Rubio has been critical of loosening the restrictions with Cuba, he being a Cuban-American and his parents having fled Cuba, as so many others did after the revolution. It will be interesting to see his thoughts regarding loosening the restrictions. Obviously, Arkansas has been pushing for loosening restrictions because Cuba, despite being a communist island nation, it's got 14 million residents. They love rice. Arkansas grows a lot of rice. And so it will be interesting to see if he talks about that at all. And Senator Bozeman, Jacob, you spoke with him this week. He actually had praise for the president for actually making this trip because he think it will be good for Arkansas and Cuba.
Yeah, and in the past, Senator Bozeman has initiated efforts on his own before the president did any of this, trying to really open up trade, trying to explore how to loosen those our relationship with Cuba. And Bozeman said originally, I think this is maybe back in April, he said the president was showing leadership, was his words. And I spoke to him a little bit about this week. The context was that President Obama he announced this week he's going to Cuba and he will meet with Raul Castro in person.
I'm very supportive of him going. And I sat by Tom Osborne, the great coach from Nebraska, for many years in the House of Representatives. He was a representative from Nebraska. And he used to say, if you ran the same play, 50 times in a row, and you didn't get any place, you need to do something different. Well, we hadn't got any place doing what we've done, and so I'm very much in favor of making it such that that we have relationship with Cuba, trading with Cuba. When you trade, you're not only trading goods and services, but you're trading ideas. You're trading values. That's how you change the world. The other thing is you have to be consistent. We trade with a lot worse people than the Cubans, the Saudi Arabians, the Chinese, Vietnamese, when you're looking at human rights and things like that. So I'm glad that he's going. It would be great for Arkansas in the sense of trade. It also would be very, very good for the Cuban people.
So we heard this week, almost, I think, the entire presidential field from the Republican Party condemned this trip from the president. They didn't like that he was doing this. Tom Cotton has said we should not be working with the Castro regime. I know Ted Cruz has been especially critical. I think Marco Rubio has as well.
Yeah.
But there's John Bozeman.
Yeah, and you mentioned Rubio, and one of his big endorsements from Arkansas was 1st District Congressman Rick Crawford, who's been supportive of this, along with Bozeman.
Yeah, planning his own trip to Cuba as well.
Yeah,
Bozeman's not isolated in Arkansas's politics, at least. The governor has been to Cuba also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just pretty much everyone but Tom Cotton, and I think Steve Womack, are pretty on board with this.
And, one interesting, too, while most minority groups or immigrants tend to be Democratic, getting back to my time down in South Florida, an interesting thing about the Cuban-American population is they have all along been Republicans. And one story in particular where I spent months in the city's Little Havana neighborhood covering the international custody fight over this little six-year-old Cuban boy, Ilian Gonzalez, I learned a whole lot about the history of it, and it really all goes back to President Kennedy. The fact that Cubans felt like President Kennedy abandoned the effort to overthrow Fidel Castro at the Bay of Pigs, and that's where the Cuban-American population became cemented as Republicans, and that's where you get where you have actually what you do today with Marco Rubio and people who don't want to have anything to do with Cuba until there is someone without the name Castro in power down there, and ideally a democratically elected leader. But the politics, when you go back and look at the history of Cuba and why someone like Rubio feels the way he does, is extremely interesting. And again, I'd just really be interested to see if Rubio even touches on that when he's in Little Rock on Sunday.
Well, the Cuban government, I guess, has certainly forgiven us, or the Kennedy administration, for invading their island and trying to kill them.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, we've talked a lot about the elected officials in the legislative branch and the executive branch, but there's a lot of action going on, particularly in Arkansas this year, in judiciary contests and a lot of outside money making a little bit of a different kind of campaign.
Yeah, that's right. There are two races that will be decided on the March 1st primary ballot for the Arkansas Supreme Court. One is for an associate justice position between Clark Mason, a Little Rock attorney, and Circuit Judge Sean Womack from Mountain Home. On the other side, there's a race for Chief Justice. As listeners to the podcast should know, former Chief Justice Jim Hanna passed away earlier this year after retiring last fall. He was replaced by an appointment from Governor Hutchinson. Current Associate Justice Courtney Goodson is vying for that role. She's being challenged by Circuit Judge Dan Kemp from Mountain View, Arkansas. And it's gotten pretty heated these past few weeks. Spending in the race has ticked up significantly, and not just from the candidates themselves. Particularly for this Chief Justice race, there's been this outside conservative group called the Judicial Crisis Network. It's been running ads critical of Goodson, most recently for her role in siding with the six other justices on the Supreme Court in striking down the state's voter ID requirement in 2014. But earlier, they ran TV ads criticizing her for accepting contributions from class action lawyers, which has been a topic of increased scrutiny in recent weeks. There was a big series of articles by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette looking at cash in the courts, the influence of attorneys on justices in the Supreme Court, et cetera, et cetera. A couple of watchdog groups came out with an analysis this week, basically showing that this spending on ads by outside groups has really ballooned recently. These two groups, the Brennan Center for Justice and Justice at Stake, they kind of refer to themselves as nonpartisan watchdog groups. Anyways, I spoke to spokeswoman for Justice at Stake, Lori Kinney, and here she is kind of describing how this dynamic in Arkansas is kind of reflective of a national trend.
Arkansas exemplifies a trend that we've been seeing nationwide in this increased participation by big national groups in state Supreme Court races and groups that very often don't disclose their donors, which is exactly what's happening with the group that's participating in the race in Arkansas now. That is a really, really big concern because as national partisan groups play a bigger part in state Supreme Court races, it raises a lot of questions about the agendas that these groups might have for the courts in those states. It does a real disservice to voters who don't know who in reality is paying for these messages about the justices in their campaigns to be put out during the election cycle. And it really undermines public confidence in the courts because it raises the question whether justice is for sale in the state.
We do have another example that this isn't at the forefront of this campaign, but with Mike Maggio, the former circuit court judge in Faulkner County, there's that instance, he's still on trial for this, where the government claims that he was bribed to lower a verdict for a nursing home owner. So speaking to her point about the public's conception of the judicial system being fair, it's not exactly at a good base level in Arkansas heading into this election.
But at least with that case, there was a paper trail, and you could follow who had made the donations, and that's what has led to Maggio now awaiting sentencing.
Yeah, and you wouldn't be able to trace these kind of...
Yeah, the Judicial Crisis Network apparently has spent, as of our recording this, more than $600,000 on TV ads in markets around Arkansas. By comparison, in that same race, Courtney Goodson's campaign has spent just a little over $290,000. Dan Kemp's campaign has spent over a little over $60,000. Now, I've been interviewing candidates for the Supreme Court, and I've been asking them, should they distance themselves from these kinds of outside groups? Should they condemn them? Should they just ignore them? And let me just play you a few of the responses I've had so far, and we'll be hearing more from these judicial candidates coming up. But let me start first with two candidates in the other race that hasn't had quite as much scrutiny. Here is Clark Mason when I asked him, you know, What should a judicial candidate do in this case?
From my standpoint, I am very much in favor of the word that is used so often, transparency. And first of all, you have to start with the premise of, are these ads? And usually they're in the form of what we describe as attack ads. Mm-hmm. And are these ads, are these spots that are running, are they true? Are they correct? And do they fairly represent the issue that they may or may not be using as the subject of that ad? Now, if they are misleading, then absolutely, without question in my mind, the candidate should, and I've committed to do this myself, step up and say, no, I will renounce that. I want nothing to do with this at all.
Now, that was Little Rock attorney Clark Mason. His opponent, Sean Womack, said this.
Yeah, I think every candidate has to make that decision on their own. That's not been part of the race that I'm involved in, so I don't want to comment on what's happening in somebody else's race. I think generally, more generically, the question there on dark money in general, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. Disclosure fixes everything. So one of the things that I think has been the consequence of, you know, maybe people with good intentions that tried to set up all these different layers of rules that everyone has to go through to get to the process of raising enough money to run for office, is that they have forced a lot of money into non-disclosed sources. And, you know, I don't think that we ought to have money coming in from non-disclosed sources. I think we ought to disclose everything. But I think that is the real-life consequence of the efforts to change the way campaign financing has been done. And it's unfortunate.
Now, so far in that race, there have been no dark money ads influencing at all. But that could change in a week or two coming up towards the March 1st primary. Now, in the race for Chief Justice, I had the chance to speak with Dan Kemp, and he is the circuit judge from Mountain View. And here's what he said. He has released some statements regarding these dark money ads from the Judicial Crisis Network, specifically because they seem to be attacking his opponent, but he says he has nothing to do with them.
I did not have any prior knowledge of this Judicial Crisis Network prior to these ads being placed on radio or television, and I don't have any coordination or connection with this organization. If I did, I'd be proposing that they run positive ads for me, because I'm running a positive campaign promoting myself, my experience, my qualifications, and my values. So, these would not be the kind of ads that I would be putting out in my campaign. So I don't have any connection with this. I don't have any control over it.
Still trying to arrange an interview with Courtney Goodson. Hopefully we'll be
she's
able
probably
to
listening to the podcast.
Yeah, she's
please come on.
Yeah, we'd love to talk to you. But in lieu of that, I found an ad that her campaign has run specifically addressing these dark money ads.
Seen these ads backing John Dan Kemp? Shady and false. Paid for with dark money. Powerful interests are trying to buy our Supreme Court while hiding who they really are. You know why they're attacking me. Because I don't work for them. I work for you.
Now you get an idea of, you know, her message on those ads. Now, I will say that these Judicial Crisis Network ads don't specifically advocate for voters to choose Dan Kemp. They're actually just specific negative ads targeted at Courtney Goodson. But of course, I guess the idea behind it is that Circuit Judge Dan Kemp would benefit. But as of this point, more than $1 million has been spent on TV ads in this race for Chief Justice, large majority of it coming from that Judicial Crisis Network, which is based in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and we're not alone. I mean, this is happening in races all across the country. There are these national groups that are realizing more and more the importance of these decisions that are being made by the lower courts. You know, it may be the highest court in Arkansas, but obviously the state court is deciding on things, and some cases then eventually might go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and there are a lot of key issues, especially when it comes to things like abortion, where you are having continual court decisions that in some instances are chipping away at abortion rights. In other cases, other issues. It's basically just the effort to try and influence the overall cases, how they're working their way through the court system. It's just part of the bigger trend of money using advertising in elections. And this race for the Arkansas Supreme Court Chief Justice, by far setting a record now this year. The previous one's only a fraction of this kind of money. And with the current campaign laws that are in place, that very likely would just continue to escalate.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's brought into the conversation again whether we should be electing judges or whether there should be an appointment system. Now, I asked that of the judges that I interviewed, and all of them seemed to indicate, well, if you take away the election of Supreme Court justices, that kind of takes away power from the people. Well, at the same time, a lot of people who advocate for an appointment system say that, well, you know, there's likely not to be as much outside influence on these positions. And in fact, there was a failed attempt by a state legislator in the last session to put a constitutional amendment on this year's ballot that would change the election system that we have now for Supreme Court justices towards an appointment system. That was put forward by Matthew Shepard of El Dorado, a Republican legislator. And there was also a failed effort by Little Rock Representative Clark Tucker last legislative session to have these outside groups give them a requirement to disclose their donors with the Arkansas Secretary of State's office. That failed, but there may be more support now.
It's worth noting the argument is also out there from people who don't like the appointment system is that really you'll have the same pressures affecting those people who make the appointments as the judges themselves.
Though you would hope that Arkansas lawmakers who would perhaps, if that were the change and it was an appointment and it then had to go before legislators to approve, that those people would have more knowledge about the backgrounds of the candidates. A lot of the state senators and representatives are attorneys, but you would hope they would have more knowledge because the average Arkansan, I think it's safe to say, doesn't know anything about these judicial candidates. Most people only know what they're hearing, and when you're inundated with ads just before election time, the average person may not know how to vote and can be influenced by that. I don't think the majority of Arkansas voters are actually doing the research to really read up and make decisions on their own or even really know who these people are other than the fact that, well, the NRA is endorsing Courtney Goodson, but you just have these kind of influences, so that might be one argument for a nominating process.
But that's probably true for a lot of races, including the state legislators themselves.
Very true.
Most people have no idea who their state legislator is. The last thing I want to say about your questions that you asked to those four justices and you play the response is that even if they did renounce it, of course, their renouncement would not have the reach of these ads. Their millions of dollars in spending is not the same as them condemning it in an interview.
Yeah, or putting out a press release that might be, you know, read in the newspaper, but yeah, certainly doesn't have the reach, like you said. Yeah, and certainly there's pluses and minuses to an election system versus an appointment system, and I'm sure that's a debate we'll be hearing about for, I don't know, hopefully months to come. We'll see. Hopefully it doesn't just disappear. Well, that does it. Thanks for listening to KUAR's Week in Review podcast. You're probably listening on our website, but if not, you can also subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. KUAR is a listener-supported but editorially independent service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. We will pick back up next Friday, but for now, that's it for the news on February 19th, 2016. I'm Chris Hickey.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Michael Hiplin. And I'll add that our theme song is by our own Chris Hickey.